the President, Exeter, New Hampshire, 17 October 1952.
I see that a great many of you young people are out here to have a good time, and I'm glad to have you have a good time, but I have something to say to you that will cause you to think, I'm sure, and I'd like for you to listen so you can do a little thinking, and then if you want to holler for Ike, I'll be glad to have you do it, because I like Ike too, but I like him in the Army. I only wish I had time to stop and see your city and your famous academy. But I guess you know that I'm on a campaign trip. And that doesn't leave me much time to see any one place for very long. I'm working, of course, as hard as I can for a Democratic victory in November. I'm doing that because I honestly believe that is one of the most important elections we ever had. Important for the country's future, and it's important for the future of the whole world, and it's important for your future. That's the reason I want you to think about it. You yourselves will be running the country in the next generation, and if you inform yourselves completely on the necessities of how a government should be run, then you'll be ready to take over. It doesn't make any difference which party you take over with. If you do take over, you want to have yourselves informed so you can do a job that'll continue the greatest republic in the history of the world through the greatest period that we're now faced with. That's the reason I'm anxious for you to inform yourselves, and I want you to listen to me and then do all the yelling you want to. I won't care.
Let's do it, Harry!
I've been riding around over this part of New Hampshire with the two Democrats who have just been introduced to you. I've been highly impressed with those two gentlemen, and I think they will make you good public servants. That's Peter Poirier and William Craig, your candidate for governor. And our national ticket, we have for president a man who is one of the greatest young men to come forward for public recognition by a party in my recollection since the time of Franklin D. Roosevelt, and that's Adlai Stevenson of Chicago. And John Sparkman for vice president. He's a fine man. I served in the Senate while he was serving in the House. He's been in the Senate for quite some time, and he has a record that is beyond reproach. Now, these two candidates, the finest any party ever put before the public, are men of proven character and experience with excellent records of public service. I hope you've been listening to Governor Stevenson's speeches or reading them in the papers. They show a man who is honest with himself and with the people. Adlai Stevenson is talking with sense to the American people, just as he promised to do when he was drafted for the nomination. He's spoken out on all the issues. He's taken a stand without fear or favor toward any group or individual. I only wish his opponent were talking like Stevenson is. I wish the general were sticking to his principles and standing by his record. He's not. And this, to me, has saddened me very much and been a great disappointment for me, because I appointed the general chief of staff of the United States Army. I put him in charge of NATO because I thought he was best fitted for that job, and he is. He did a good job. I'm saying nothing against the general as a general, but I think that he is an amateur in politics. It'd be just the same if I'd take one of you boys and send you over there to command NATO. You'd have just as much idea of what was going on as to take a general who spent 40 years in the Army and put him right in the midst of a political party that's torn all to pieces. He doesn't know which way to turn, and I feel sorry for him. The good work that he has done in building up the forces of Europe against communism is one of the reasons I once thought he'd make a good president. I think it is also the reason so many liberal Republicans asked him to make the fight for their party's nomination. And now, just 3 months later, he's laid aside all the things we thought he stood for and believed in. He has surrendered to Senator Taft. He swallowed Taft's isolationist foreign policy in the guise of a budget cut. Taft has taken him completely into camp. He's doing exactly what Taft wants him to do, and the old guard version of isolationism is now what he's for. What has become of the great victory the liberal Republicans thought they'd won in Chicago? I'll tell you, they've been kicked off the platform into the bushes. Senator Taft, whom they defeated, is now enthroned as the master of the General's house. I'm not given ordinarily to quoting columnists. You know, I have a yen on for most columnists, but I have to quote one this morning. Warner Lippmann, in his column, put the matter so well that I want to read to you what he has to say. It'd be helpful, I think. Now, this is Walter Lippmann speaking in his column in the Herald Tribune of October the 16th. That's very recent. You can get it and read it for yourselves if you don't believe what I'm telling you. It would be helpful, I think, if the general would now consider, says Walter Lippmann, the anguish of his friends. Then he would take the risk of making at least one small public demonstration of how, as the leader of his party, he would resist the pressure rather than yield to it. This would buck up his friends, it would fortify them, and sustain them against the growing suspicion in the country that that man, Stevenson, may not only be speaking in the accents of greatness, but he may perhaps embody some of the qualities of a great American leader. Now, Mr. Lippmann, as is his custom, I think, fails to give that man, Stevenson, due credit, and I'm not afraid that Mr. Lippmann will wait in vain for a convincing demonstration that the Republican can stand up for the principles we once thought he held. I don't think he's going to come out and say that. It's too bad. It's a tragedy to see this man, so competent in the military field, destroying his own reputation by cheap politics. But it is fortunate that this is happening during the campaign. We've learned exactly how he believes before it is too late. And we are fortunate in the fact that we have found real constructive leadership in the Democratic Party. Now I want you boys to do a little study. I'm anxious for you boys, not the kind that you're used to. This is a study for citizenship. I want you to study just exactly what your great government stands for. You know, you were part and will be in control of the greatest government in the history of the world. The President of the United States is the most powerful executive that's ever existed on earth. And if you've studied your history, you know there have been a great many of them. And in order that the government shall continue to be yours, when you come to the point where you can take it over, you must prepare yourselves. You must do some thinking for your own benefit and welfare. It won't hurt you. It'll do you good when you get to the point where I am. After you're 69 years old, you'll be glad you've done it. And I hope all of you live to be 69, and I hope every one of you has a chance to take a part in his government, locally, with the state, or in the nation. I've been from precinct to president over the last 40 years, and I know what I'm talking about. It's the greatest business in the world, this business of government. And the government is in the hands of the people who vote. And when they don't vote, and when they don't inform themselves, and don't exercise their right to vote intelligently, and if they get bad government, then they have nobody in the world to blame but themselves. So do a little thinking. Go home and talk to your daddy and your mother and find out just exactly what the situation is in this thing. And if you do that, in the next 4 years, we'll have Adlai Stevenson in the White House and a good government.